Welcome back to another edition of the Savvy Citizen Podcast. Today, we're branching out, literally. Peyton Flowers from the Cooperative Extension is here to talk trees in Gaston County. We're getting to the root of this conversation shortly, so don't make like a tree and leave.
Do you have a young reader? Do they love animals? Then join us at the Gaston County Animal Shelter for our monthly Tales for Tales program. This happens usually one Saturday a month from 10 to 11 a.m. Children can bring books from home or borrow one at the shelter and practice reading to a shelter dog or cat. The program builds your child's confidence and enriches the life of a shelter pet. No reservations are needed. For more information, check out the Gaston County Animal Shelter page at the GastonGov.com website.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Savvy Citizen. This is Elizabeth McGee, your host today, alongside Gavin Stewart. And today we've got Peyton Flowers from Gaston County's Cooperative Extension. He is our commercial commercial horticulture agent.
Yeah.
Can you say it five times fast?
No, it's just a title, so it's nothing. Peyton is fine.
Okay, we'll just call you Peyton today. Okay, and we're going to be talking about Gaston County's tree inventory.
Yeah, so it's kind of a new concept. I'm not a runner right now. I do enjoy running, but I decided to run some of my mornings right when I started. I left the nursery industry, right?
Uh-huh.
I sit at a desk more now,
yeah,
for sure. So that means I needed to exercise more. So I started running. And then I tripped over sidewalk, and I'm like, well, what's causing the issue? I look up, there's some trees planted right next to a sidewalk. I'm like, well, this is wrong. and it's stressing the tree out. It's ruining, you know, pedestrian walkways. So I'm like, what can I do? I'm in a position to where I can at least try to raise awareness for how to better take care of our street trees,
uh-huh,
and our local tree populations within our parks. So I was like, well, I'm just going to, you know, see what's out there. And there's software that's out there to help us and help our county potentially monitor some of these issues that we may be seeing out of these trees as they grow in, mm-hmm, our urban spaces. And we can monitor them over their lifetimes, get a better idea of, you know, how they contribute and start to, because not everybody loves trees. We can start to put a dollar value to them.
Uh-huh.
And we can see how they contribute to our county and, you know, financially as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, because once we start talking money, I think people start listening.
Yeah.
So that was my main objective. So I hopped on the computer, just did a Google search. It was like, oh, there's this free software. I can train myself on it and collect data. And then I needed people to collect that data. So I reached out to the master gardeners,
uh-huh,
extension master gardeners. A few of them wanted an opportunity, and connections that I had made through Gaston College. We, uh-huh, had a few students hop on board, and we just started measuring trees.
Well, it's really cool how you fell into that.
Yeah.
After literally tripping on the sidewalk.
Literally. And it's one,
ba-dum-bum.
Yeah, it's like one of the measurements that we can make out of these tree inventories, too. And I made it a point to make that a measurement that we were going to collect.
Of dollar value?
Not dollar value, but the sidewalk list.
Oh, of hazards.
And it's, yeah, not just a problem with along our streets, within our parks. So yeah, it's everywhere.
There's nothing more scary than a big, giant tree that looks like it's going to fall in your house.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's another thing, too. We can track. So tree inventories help us track how these trees can be better managed. So that means pruning.
Okay.
And I can guarantee you, I don't want to say nobody, but very few people know how to prune trees properly. Mm-hmm. And at least this, you know, can bring some attention to that, too.
Yeah, I have like 8 giant 70-year-old pine trees surrounding my house. And I love them. Like, I grew up with pine trees around my house in coastal North Carolina, and they're so beautiful. They are a little scary, especially when it gets a little windy. And we have had a branch fell on my neighbor's car, which luckily he was really nice about it. But I I really feel that. Like, I feel like I don't know what to do to take care of these trees. So I've just turned to having an arborist come out every year or so to just give them a checkup. I don't know what else to do, you know?
Yeah, that's probably your best plan once these trees get mature. Obviously, a homeowner's not going to have the equipment they need to get up there and or be crazy enough, really. So
yeah.
Kudos to these arborists for climbing up.
You need some good insurance to climb up there the way they do.
And pines are unique. Other than, you know, them taking mechanical damage or, you know, just disease or, you know, insect that eventually cause decline in them. If you just see them sway in the wind and it looks like a healthy tree, pines are meant to do that. Mm-hmm. They're actually really good at staying stable in high wind events. Mm-hmm. It's our, you know, our broadleaf trees that we really kind of focus in on these tree inventories, because a lot of them, especially red maples, really popular to plant in urban spaces, and they like to have multiple leaders. So those pine trees have that, you know, really straight shape. And then you see anything that has like any tree that's going to have like a more of a pyramidal shape is probably more prone to having multiple leaders. And then barks.
When you say leader, are you talking about like branches?
So like the main trunk, you'll have one kind of main stem, and then two or three main stems branch off of it. And they're competing to be the dominant stem on that tree.
Okay. So last time, so it just so happened that my next door neighbor was an arborist. So he was the one that I got to take a look at my trees. But he pointed out one of my pine trees. It basically is shaped like the letter Y.
Yeah, that's not good.
Yeah. And he said, that's the one that you need to watch. He said, it's stable, but because the main trunk, it splits off into basically two equal pieces, that tree is liable to split down the middle, at some point.
So high winds, ice storms, which we're all prone to, you know, hurricane season comes through. Our summers have these brutal thunderstorms with high winds, and you just see we call them codominant stems. They start to break and snap, because trees, where they naturally grow in the forest, they kind of prune themselves, right? They're shaded out, and one dominant branch is what's going to try to reach for the sun. So all of it works out in a natural setting. But once we start trying to bring trees in because they do have positive benefits, we really need to understand how to take care of them. And otherwise, these assets can truly become a liability.
When you were describing your morning run, what exactly is the problem that you encountered? Like, obviously, it breaks through the surface of the sidewalk or the greenway or whatever it is. But was it as simple as a tree that is mature and is too close to the sidewalk?
So immediately after like tripping, I was like, somebody has had to do some research on this, because what happens is the root system of these trees, as they mature, they grow. And most of the tree's root system is going to be along, you know, the first 6 to 8 inches of the soil. And they work their way underneath these sidewalks. And if it's just a classic, you know, concrete sidewalk that's been poured without any sort of, now there are tree companies that go in and they do some interesting subsoil systems to allow these trees to root without lifting sidewalks. You see that more in larger cities. Charlotte has a few of those types of systems. But if they're close enough to that sidewalk, those roots grow and they start to lift and buckle that concrete along its joints, and they can even start to crack it. And once that goes over about a quarter of an inch, that sidewalk is no longer compliant as far as the American like Disabilities Act. So it's not ADA compliant anymore once that lifts over a quarter of an inch.
And there's one specifically in McAdamville that was like that for so long. I don't know if y'all ever walked through the lights.
I live in between Belmont and McCann. I'm not trying to give any, you know, that's one of the things about tree inventory, because it can shed a light on a lot of problems. And then you're like, well, where do we start?
Yeah.
The point is, now you have a place to know where to start.
Right.
And it's, you know, I would love for more municipalities to buy in. And there are some that are doing tree inventory work, but not our smaller communities don't have an arborist on staff or, you know, they're just getting by the best they can. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this, all these problems can be avoided with proper planning, better, you know, maintenance when the tree's young. And then we're not having to worry about those big trees having structural issues if we take care of them earlier. So all of it kind of comes back to having a better understanding of what we currently have and how we can improve upon it in the future. And we can, you know, our planning and our development can follow suit so we can avoid those problems. Because right now, I mean, how many parking lots do you go into and you see just trees that look great when for the first 2 years they were there, and now they just look abysmal?
Yeah.
It's a lot of stress. It's a lot of heat coming off that pavement. There's not a lot of water management. The first 2 years are critical for that in trees, and those trees aren't giving us the benefits that they could potentially give us if we don't take care of them. It's an investment.
Yeah.
And it seems like a lot of money up front, but right here, so through, back to the inventory though. So we went into Dallas Park because it's right there at our office.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we need to see, we're interested in how much, you know, as far as those trees were concerned, how many dollars are we getting out of these trees annually? And that's something that a tree inventory can tell us. And that's measuring how we conserve energy because of shading, CO2 capture, air quality, stormwater runoff capture, and just its aesthetic value. And that's based off of people way smarter than me putting together a formula into this software and us going out there, identifying the tree and taking a measurement. And clearly, the more mature the tree, the more value it's going to have. And the average, as far as the trees were concerned in Dallas Park, we kudos to the kids at Gaston College and the Extension Master Gardeners, because over like a 4 month time span, they kind of came on their own, and 168 trees were inventoried.
Wow, so that's
good,
awesome.
Like a good chunk of the park, and they were able to, on average, about $107 annually per tree. So
oh,
in those
168
trees, that comes out just under $20,000 a year that's being contributed just in Dallas Park alone. And that's not the entire park that we got to in those 4 months.
You know, when you think about the benefits of preserving the tree canopy of Gaston County, I think about our... Gaston County is rapidly growing. We're a top 10 county in North Carolina, and our population is growing. We know this. And I think that this just ties perfectly into that idea that so many other county employees are keeping top of mind of just responsible development, preserving our natural resources, such as our trees. And I think preserving the tree canopy just kind of goes hand in hand with this. I mean, so I'm thinking about, I know in the city of Charlotte, there's a nonprofit, I think it's called Trees Charlotte, and they go around, they basically, their job is they want to renovate the tree canopy of Charlotte, like put the trees back in where they've been taken out. And so I think it's cool that here in Gaston County, we can be kind of on the front end of this to try to keep the trees that we have and take care of them. I don't know. It sounds really cool. But I do want to know a little bit more about actually your process for inventorying trees. Like, are you just doing this by hand, like manual labor through people, or are you using pictometry or anything like that?
Nothing fancy. Just boots on the ground.
Boots on the ground.
I mean, can you use things like I have the guys at Natural Resources were telling me, hey, you should check out what these drones can do, right? So this is probably can be done way easier, but it was a chance to teach skills to just average Joes. I mean, that's what I am. Although I am a horticulture person, it doesn't mean that I have this extensive background in, you know, trees. And I never really sat out. Nobody does this in their spare time, right? Go out and try to identify trees. It was a way for me to sharpen my skills as our commercial hort agent, and also sharpen the skills of others and use my horticulture knowledge to teach them how to identify what tree species that they were seeing, how to, you know, open up a dichotomous key and figure out, okay, this leaf shape, or this is alternately arranged or oppositely arranged leaves. Just simple skills, the simple skill of observation.
Mm-hmm.
And then being able to, so the first thing they're going to do when they go up to a tree is, after I've, you know, instructed them and have taught them the skill, is go out there and identify the species. So they ID the species, and then they take a measurement called diameter at breast height. and that's at 4.5 feet up on the tree if it's a straight tree. It gets complicated, so there's different, and we have a booklet, you know, just to help folks kind of understand how to approach measuring those main stems.
Mm-hmm.
And they put that information in there. They have to do a little math, but I've kind of dummy proofed that too, because you know, what is it? Basically when you're taking diameter breast height, is you're measuring the circumference of the tree at that height. So how do we get the diameter? Fuzzy Wuzzy was a bear. Area equals pi r squared. Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Circumference equals 2 pi r.
Oh, my gosh. Right?
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Who was it? Miss Williams, sixth grade, maybe?
I wish I learned that one. So
circumference equals 2 pi r. So I've converted that out because our extension master gardeners were a little bit flustered by the math. So I just went ahead and made a key for them that had already done the math for them.
Yep.
So they go on there, take their measurement, record that, measure any sidewalk if that's nearby. Utility lines is something else that we can record. Mm-hmm. If there's going to be potential conflict in the future or current conflict. So that's something that can be addressed right away.
Mm-hmm.
For our, you know, those in our municipal systems, like I believe the town of Dallas manages the utility right of ways in Dallas Park. So mm-hmm. if we caught a conflict, that information could be turned over to them and they
I'm sure they appreciate
it.
That.
So yeah, it's a process, but it doesn't take long to take some simple measurements once you really know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Identification is probably the hardest thing to learn. And we just teach leaf identification right now because it's one of the more simple. Mm-hmm. And we use phone apps, different things just to, mm-hmm. you don't have to be an expert.
Is this something that you are actively recruiting community volunteers to help out with?
Funny you say that. I've tried to recruit people along. It seems like we have a good partnership going with Gaston College.
Okay.
Soon I will be going to a conference there and maybe introducing this as a piece of the curriculum for STEM teachers at, you know, the high school level or even at the community college level. As incorporating some of the things that they're learning in the classroom in their biology classes or environmental science classes or even math classes as part of being able to see how to, because that's your question, right, when you're in high school, is how am I going to use this in the real world?
Yeah.
And it gives them a practical use of the knowledge that they're learning in the classroom. 100%, like, yeah. Nobody cares. Like, me sitting in a biology class when I'm a sophomore, never did I realize I was going to need to know gymnosperm is, or a gymnosperm, and why it matters.
I'm having flashbacks.
And then you're looking at, but it matters because I'm looking at it here on paper. We see the species diversity that's in Dallas Park, and that's one of the things that makes Dallas Park a shining star compared to a lot of other areas. Because if you go along our streets, what tree do you see mostly? Crepe myrtles or Chinese elms. And yeah. It's, you know, straight rows of the same tree over and over again. And now we can start to see even with like crepe myrtle bark scale, more and more issues with pests.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can break up, you know, that kind of monoculture of species that we're using as street trees and use other options and figure out, how do we know that we have too many of this plant unless we actually take the inventory?
Oh, that's such a good point.
So there's so many different aspects of tree management that an inventory can touch, and whatever party's interested in it, we now have that information.
Yeah.
I've thought about HOAs. I've had an HOA kind of reach out to me and kind of ask me, because like you said, we're developing, and when are we seeing issues in these communities? It's after the developers leave, right?
Yeah.
And they're in these trees, most of these trees in this neighborhood that I went out to where they're interested in adopting this kind of concept to monitor their trees, is they're all about 13 to 14 year old red maples,
uh-huh.
which are really bad for girdling their root system. And
what does that mean?
So that means so maples are really bad for surface roots. So they'll have a root. It's really important, like when you go to a container nursery, to look at the root system of the plant if you're buying, especially a hardwood tree. And the roots will start to grow around the base of that tree and kind of start to cut off the vascular system of that plant.
Mm.
And one of the major components of that is using bark mulch. and mounding it up around the base of the tree. And not every tree in that neighborhood, the healthy maples were a thin layer, 2 to 3 inches, right at ground level. Every maple I looked at, and there was probably 20, 25 trees that I passed by as I'm driving by. I'm just judging everybody's trees. So, so y'all watch out. But they had mulched up probably 8 to 12 inches on the trunk of that tree. And not only can that cause, you know, root and crown rot issues, especially crown rot in that case, but you would also have roots trying to kind of leverage their way out into that mulch. And as they grow, start to grow in a circle around that tree. And basically, when I look at a tree and it looks like, and it's getting to that age where it's 10 to 12 years old and it looks like a straight pole in the ground, mm-hmm. I know that it's either been planted too deep or it's been mulched way too high. Because a tree is going to have a nice taper into the ground.
Yeah.
You want that. And I don't know if we see it and we just kind of, you know, one neighbor does it, so then we do it. And uh-huh. then our landscaper's doing it incorrectly and we think that that's the appropriate way.
Yeah.
But just addressing little cultural issues like that within these communities can go a long way.
Yeah.
And there's the other thing is these trees are going to get 30 or 40 foot tall. And they're not pruned correctly, and they're in somebody's front yard 10 foot away from their house.
Oh,
and we didn't
that's
address,
really close.
Yeah, and we didn't address those issues early on. Mm-hmm. I guess we're out of luck.
Yeah.
So we can go in on a tree inventory and say, hey, this needs structural pruning. And we can, if something is like your pine tree, and we think that it's needs something that needs immediate attention, or if it's an area like a park mm-hmm. where we see, you know, some dead and dying branches in like a high traffic area, we can mark that as urgent and mm-hmm. needing to be taken care of as soon as possible in the inventory.
Mm-hmm. Is your goal eventually to, it seems like a very high level task, but is it really to go around, I guess you start with the public places and then eventually, I don't know, it just seems like, obviously, we're going to have thousands upon thousands of trees, so it seems like it's going to be something that's it's going to be burning for a little while, you know?
My hope is that communities decide to adopt this slowly, but that if it catches, you know, fire and that folks are interested in it, that we can, you know, train municipal workers in a certain way, because you can tailor these inventories based off of whatever the project goal is. Mm-hmm. You can tailor and train those folks one way. If it's an HOA that's just concerned about the health or the aesthetic of their tree, we can train them a different way. And ultimately, my goal is to certify as an arborist, because I think that we lack a lot of, I think the city of Gastonia may be the only municipal system that I think has an arborist on staff.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to have as many trees as I go and look at. It'd be nice just to say, hey, we're sending Cooperative Extension is sending a certified arborist out to look at this. Mm-hmm. So that's on my to-do list after I, you know, get my master's in extension education.
I like that
one
idea.
Thing at a time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like the idea of potentially the other communities either stepping up or having someone, or, you know, like you said, even the HOAs potentially. It sounds like it could be a group effort as long as everyone gets educated and then there's at least a couple people who are on board.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tried to kind of market this early on as, hey, I'm going to do this as, and this is part of my master's project, by mm-hmm. the way, this whole kind of concept. But I try to market it to folks as like, hey, volunteers, if you're interested in this, come pay for the material you need to learn how to identify trees. I'll teach you how, and then we go and do it. I think it takes investment from the community. Like, yeah. It's going to be community at a time. It's going to take a community approach, and it's going to take a handful of members in a community being passionate. It's going to take them tripping over the sidewalk. They're going to have to be passionate about the issue enough or seeing enough trees die in their neighborhood to say, hey, we need to take a course of action.
Uh-huh.
And you hate for it to get that way, but at least we can improve, you know, in the future by the mistakes made in the past.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned something about crepe myrtles. Do we even get started down that? I don't know. Is there an incentive to get rid of them at this point?
No, the thing is, they are a wonderful street tree. They're not native. And, you know, the question comes up. I was at a tree training really prominent tree company in Charlotte, and they were doing like a private training for us extension agents, and they were talking about somebody was up there from Texas. They came up this training from Texas, and they're like, how are you pushing natives in these spaces? And the thing is that it's not necessarily that we want to push natives in these spaces, because is there anything native about the urban treescape? No. So they're a wonderfully adapted tree. Are there other trees that perform well in that same situation? Yes. So my thing is, crepe myrtles are awesome street trees.
Yeah.
But we need to incorporate them in a way where we kind of break up that pest and disease cycle that we're probably going to end up with, pest cycle already, and eventual disease cycle that we'll see as they continue to be planted in straight rows.
Yeah, and I only mention that because I've seen in other communities where there may be maybe it's more of a problem for other counties, but where they'll literally, you know, give you a different tree. Or give you something to start in it to replace a crepe myrtle. But
what is the issue? The issues of the pest situation?
I would think it's just they're encouraging something because they're not being, crepe myrtles are historically not managed well.
Right.
So folks are crepe murdering them, right? Cutting, you know, the tops off because they are a tree. It depends on, now there are tons of cultivars out there that will only get 6 to 8 foot tall. But the one that you bought 30 years ago is not an improved cultivar, and it's probably going to be, you know, at minimum a 15-foot tall and 15-foot wide tree.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
And then they're conflicting with utility lines, so all of that factors in. So by putting the cart before the horse is where we've gotten into trouble with the crepe myrtles.
Gotcha.
So poor planning, and then also that monoculture aspect, too. It's not necessarily that the tree itself is bad. It's that it wasn't planned well, and we just need a more diverse array of trees.
But we should have learned something, right? Another tree that they have a bounty on and that they're replacing, you know, if you cut down your Bradford pears.
That I think is probably what I was thinking.
Yeah, I think you're thinking about Bradford pears.
Yes.
And they are notoriously bad about those codominant stems.
Yes.
And they just get destroyed. They're invasive, and they get destroyed in these high wind events.
Mm-hmm.
And we think about it, there's not as many windbreaks anymore as we open up and we develop. So no new development's going to have those in them. So if we can kind of slowly taper out of those Bradford pears and put other high-performing species in the street spaces.
So when you say invasive tree species, what are you talking about? I mean, it sounds bad.
Bradford pears... So they were originally put into the landscape thinking, oh yeah, they've been hybridized to the point they can't.
Those are the ones that have like the white flowers on them.
White flowers, they don't smell the best.
Yep.
Yeah.
Everybody's familiar with that. So what's happened is that they did cross-pollinate, and they have the calorie pear, which pops up on roadsides, in forest situations, in pastures, and it has these huge thorns on it.
Oh.
And they tear into tractor tires in a lot of my farmers' pastures, and they're a booger to get rid of. Mm. And they are really good at reproducing. And if you cut them down, what do? They're really vigorous, and they re-sprout. And
out of the stump?
Oh, yeah. Stumps are, and that's what folks don't realize. You leave a stump, you have a large root system there. This is why you bring in the stump grinder and you get rid of the stump completely, because there's a good chance that unless you treat that with a chemical herbicide, that you're immediately or almost immediately that you're going to get some regrowth eventually out of that stump.
Huh.
And the calorie pear and the Bradford pear are notoriously bad about just resprouting and being fine. And there's not a whole lot other than chemical herbicide or just grinding the stump and getting rid of them completely that we can really do to. So cutting it down is not where we stop with those.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but if you had to choose like a couple options other than a Bradford pear for people to plant, what would that be?
Oh, and this is not a native. There is a native, fringe tree, but Chinensis rotusus, so Chinese fringe tree. It's probably my favorite. I have one planted in my yard.
Yeah.
Beautiful white flowers, great shape. There's some in Dallas Park outside. The reason I'm saying make sure, like, it really matters the cultivar, because the females can bury and they can leave a mess. So that's another thing we have to think about, right, when it comes to what spaces we plant them in, what species or what cultivar we're going with.
So I think I know what you're talking about when you say cultivar, because one species, like a genus species, can have several varieties of cultivars.
Varieties. So you think, right? Yes.
Okay.
So when I say cultivar, I'm talking about varieties. It's just a fancy way.
But we're not talking about a whole other species of tree. It's the same species, but there's just different versions of it.
Yes.
Okay.
And it would be a different, so the Chinese species is different than the American species.
Okay.
But there are different cultivars of the Chinese species, so different varieties of this Chinese species, and all of them are pretty fabulous. And that they're small growing. I mean, you're looking at 15-foot canopy, 15-foot tall. It'd be a really good replacement, I think, in some of these urban spaces. I'm trying to think of a few more. I think you could go, I don't think we use shrubs enough in some of these spots, in some of these, like, what do you call those? Like the tree coffins, that's what I call them. So there's just little squares. I think we could benefit from using shrubs that can be either tree formed in those spaces, or even things like hollies that kind of grow pyramidal and may not get too big.
Right.
I'm trying to think if I have any other favorites. I'm not really big on, I will say the shining star in all of this has really been the red maple, and I'm not opposed to using them in urban spaces. Mm-hmm. But it's just, for them to be pruned correctly would be my number one. And then Chinese elm is another great one, as long as it's pruned correctly and used in the appropriate space. So every tree has a place that it belongs. Although I do have a few that I'm more partial to.
Don't we all? Yeah. Peyton, Gavin, thank you all so much for coming on here today and really grow our knowledge about trees. I really feel like I'm channeling Adam today with my puns.
You really planted that joke.
Ah, gosh. Thank you. Thank you, Gavin.
I'm just here.
Anyways, we'll see you all again next week. Thanks so much.
Did you know Savvy Citizen now has a live music series? Check out the monthly episodes of Savvy Sounds, where we bring you original music and interviews with musicians from in and around Gaston County. View it on demand on the Gaston County Government YouTube page. Just search for the Savvy Sounds playlist. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Savvy Citizen Podcast. It's produced by the Gaston County Communications Office with hosts Janet Schaefer, D'Andrea Bradley, Elizabeth McGee, and Adam Gobb. Joshua Braswell serves as executive producer, and Gavin Stewart serves as field reporter and producer. Please like us and share reviews on Apple, Spotify, Google Play, and anywhere you get your podcasts.